Hey everybody, this is Michael Barnett from This Is Darkness. I'm really proud to present you with our first audio interview on thisisdarkness.com. We usually always cover releases and interviews and everything in a written form, but I've been branching out recently into audio and video, so this interview that we're covering here today with Dan Riegler of Apothecary's Garden is going to be, I hope, a really entertaining listen for you guys. I really enjoyed having the conversation with Dan, and I learned a lot during the conversation. So I hope you all will have fun and enjoy the listen. And in the background, we'll be hearing Hymnambulize and Darley. So here's the interview, and enjoy. Excellent. So let's hop into it then.
Okay.
So yeah, the first question here, what originally got you into burning incense?
I think it was when I started studying ancient Egypt and started my esoteric studies, and I think that may have been what triggered it back in my teens.
Cool. So yeah, that's probably good enough on that one. That I wasn't really looking for too long of an answer there.
Okay,
At
good.
what point in your life did you realize the social and environmental repercussions of mass marketed incense? I specifically ask you that question because I know how much through your blog and through your store you really talk about how important it is to do things in the right way. So what kind of life situations happened that got you thinking about this on an incense level?
It's further reaching than just incense. I got involved with the herbal medicine a long time ago, and working with herbs, growing medicinal plants. I mean, there's a fine line between aromatic plants, medicinal plants, incense, perfume. They really are one and the same in a lot of ways. And basically, just I guess when I started wildcrafting, harvesting plants for medicine and perfume, it struck me how many plants we're losing. I guess just started becoming more aware of how fast we're losing our aromatic and medicinal plants. Yeah, so
Okay.
I guess when you connect with plants and yeah, sorry.
So you were more looking at this from a kind of a spiritual level from the very beginning, because like for me, I was just like a 13-year-old kid and I went into a hippie shop and I picked up a pack of incense and I just wanted to be the cool hippie kid that was a 13-year-old that didn't know any difference of anything. I just wanted to be a cool kid that burned incense. So it seems to
Right.
you that you really came at this directly with more of a spiritual angle and not as a aesthetic, just a fun thing to do.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, no, that's
Yes.
okay. Yeah, I know it's going a
You
while
get
back,
older.
and it's my idea of how I initially got into it also is a little blurred, but
Yeah.
I just thought a little bit of insight
Well,
on that could be interesting.
yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I really got into the sustainability thing later in life when I was, working more directly with herbs, growing herbs, aromatics, and working with them more intimately. Now that you mention it, I do recall in my teen years experimenting with Indian incenses, different forms of dhup and agarbati, and, not knowing what the hell I was doing. And some of them, looking back, they were obviously artificial, full of synthetic compounds. Yeah, but as far as the environmental repercussions go, it was later in life that it really struck me.
Okay. And then at what point did that sort of inspiration and understanding of that those environmental elements at what point did that lead you into working at starting this apothecary's garden and having your sort of motivations that lead you to do this in such a sustainable and environmentally mindful way?
I'm actually reading the question. Well, I realized that the planet is our garden. You know, that's what it is. It's an apothecary's garden, and I was putting together a teaching garden for the local community where I live, with, you know, a selection of medicinal and aromatic plants, local and exotic, and it struck me that the whole planet is actually our garden, and that we all need to take care of it, and that we all benefit from it, and we've become disassociated from nature and from the planet. Distance. We don't realize that the impact that we have and how much we rely on the planet to provide us with all these goodies.
Yeah, I agree entirely, and that was definitely what resonated so much with me when I found your site. I guess this next question is a little meandering, but maybe you'll have an answer to it. If not, that's okay.
Okay.
It is a little, sometimes I ask like really open-ended questions to give somebody a way to run off wherever they want with it, or just skip it if you want is okay too. So like, what do you think is the most misunderstood element of incense burning? I mean, like I was saying, you know, people just go out and buy the synthetic things and not even realize that they're burning something that's like 99% chemicals, and then you have the angles of the overconsumption, and then you have the topic of sage burning that's come up over the last couple of years, that people are realizing, you know, everybody's burning sage, and it may not really be the best thing for you culturally to do, but you're just kind of picking it up from somebody else, and now you're using up all of the sage kind of thing. So what sort of things like that really seems like the worst one to you that we have to put a stop to?
I think people just need to be educated first about synthetics. It's all about education, and you know what that means, with, you know, the impact that synthetic aroma chemicals have on us. And once once we understand that, then we can start looking for or appreciating natural alternatives, which leads us into the whole sustainability issue again. So really it's about it's about education. People need to understand what they're using, where it comes from, how they're connected to it, and that they are a part of the bigger picture. As consumers, we all impact, you know, the world, with every purchase, every click of our mouse. I'm not too big on the cultural appropriation. Like, I think the planet belongs to all of us, and she shares herself with all of us, and she doesn't make distinctions between, you know, this culture or that culture. I mean, you can, sage is a great, cleansing smudge, you know, but so is frankincense. You know, every culture has theirs. In a way, you know, if you're living in North America, then sage is part of your environment. It's part of your local herbs as well.
Yeah, so sort of, even if I'm of European descent, the fact that I was born here and I live around the sage kind of by default brings me into that sort of natural, becomes part of my, it's a new culture that's building now, sort of a melting into different cultures. So yeah, I look at it very much in that same way too. You need to be focused on not over harvesting the sage, but as long as we're as long as we're considerate of the sage, then it really shouldn't be too much of a consideration of who is burning it.
That's right. That's what's important.
Okay.
And we're all responsible for it. It doesn't matter what our cultural background is. And to be honest, you know, we live here, our bodies are part of the land, and you know, we go back to the land. And we're part of nature. We're an integral part of nature, and has nothing to do with our cultures. And as such, we also have benefits and we have responsibilities. So, you know, if everybody took care of their own little plot of, you know, garden in the world, we wouldn't have any problems.
Yeah, I agree. So, I wanted to talk now a little bit about some of your travels that you have been discussing through your website that have been really interesting to me that I've been reading about. If you just kind of want to take it in a general direction and tell the listeners or readers a little bit about what made you think that you wanted to sort of go over into other countries and make this firsthand connection with various farms or tribes or whatever it may be that you're connecting with over in different regions of the world. What kind of got you into the idea of doing that? You know, what are the ways that you pick a partnership? You know, if you don't have to get into too much of the back end of it, but just kind of on the surface, what are your considerations when you're looking for a source?
A source would have to be people that actually are in contact. Like there's so many middlemen in between the plants, the aromatic plants, and us. But if I can connect with someone who's right there with the plants, has a relationship with the plants, that's the gold right there. Because they are the ones that can actually make a difference. The middlemen, the buyers and sellers, you know, they're basically concerned with profit. But the people that live on the land, and in a lot of cases, these cultures and communities have a relationship with the plants, and they're integral parts of their society, and they go back hundreds, if not thousands of years. And that's, and these people, I mean, realistically, they are the stewards of the plants and the land. They're the ones that are right there on the ground that can make a difference. And I think taking care of their needs, making sure that they have healthy communities, their needs are being taken care of, they get whatever education or guidance they need in order to care for the plants and, you know, make sure they're thriving, make sure their little corner of the world, the environment is happy and healthy. So I think I spent a lot of years wildcrafting in North America, you know, going out and harvesting wild plants, and you develop connections with the plants, relationships. And so it's easy for me to identify with the harvesters as well. You know, their income, their livelihood depends on it. And in a lot of cases, you hear horror stories about how harvesters are taken advantage of. You know, you hear about it everywhere. You know, rural people, they're ignorant, they're not educated, and people take advantage of them. And they commodify, the plants then become commodified. So, and the people, the communities that actually make a living or work with the herbs are marginalized. And I think that's one of the biggest problems with what's happening with our medicinal and aromatic herbs. We're losing them everywhere. And I think the solution and the root of the whole issue is to directly connect with the harvesting communities, the collectors, and that's it, and get them set up so they can be good stewards. Give them what they need, whether it's paying them more, which in most cases they get paid a pittance. Sometimes, you know, they don't make enough to keep them going the whole year. And honestly, middlemen and buyers just take advantage of them whenever possible. And this is a global thing too. So really, I feel like if we're going to make a difference in the world, if we're going to slow down the decline and disappearance of our aromatic and medicinal herbs, we have to get right down to the people on the ground that are there working with the plants. Give them what they need, the tools that they need. If we need to educate them on how to propagate the plants, because that's the biggest thing. It's okay to harvest plants, but when you over-harvest, their populations decline. Their populations decline, then, you know, there's more pressure on the plant population because, you know, there's less to harvest, and it's kind of a spiral. So when you work with plants, you know, you get to know them. What do plants need? You know, some plants, every plant, every being in the world needs to propagate itself. That's like its prime directive. I must propagate myself. Some plants do it through seeds. Some do it through, you know, root division, or, you know, spreading roots. And so, you know, giving the harvesters the education and information they need in order so that they can take care of the environment, so plants aren't declining, plants are thriving. You know, in some cases, it's like harvesting properly. Like in some cases, people are hiring uneducated people to go out and harvest frankincense, and in some cases they're doing it improperly. They're damaging the trees. You know, in some societies, like Somali societies, people have been harvesting the frankincense trees for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. They have systems. They have methods. There's a time to harvest. There's a time not to harvest. They let the trees rest. There's a whole, you know, and it's completely tied into their society and their culture. It's not just about getting as much as we can from the trees. So, you know, in the case of Somalia, for instance, there was a big diaspora. There was so much war and conflict in Somalia for generations that hundreds of thousands of Somalis fled. And a lot of their cultural knowledge was lost. It wasn't passed on to the younger generation. For instance, in some communities, the knowledge of how to harvest frankincense trees and was lost. So you find, you know, there are instances where people just are damaging the trees, or they're going at them, you know, they're over-harvesting. Over-harvesting can be a problem. So, you know, the communities need to be re-educated. And somehow, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's an excellent answer. That was exactly how I was hoping you would take it. So, sort of what you were saying there at the beginning, it's like you were learning on your own when you were younger how to harvest sustainably for yourself. So then when you go over into these other areas, you know what you're looking at when you see other people that are harvesting the correct way. And when you see them harvesting incorrectly, as you said, there's been so many different things that have happened throughout recent history that people have lost that ancient knowledge, I guess I would say.
That's right.
And so then you can, instead of just taking from them and letting them continue to do it the wrong way for your own profit, you're actually having conversations with these various peoples and telling them, hey, not only is this how I think you should do it, but this is literally how your ancestors did it. So you're sort of almost stepping back in and reinvigorating their own culture in certain ways. I really thought that was cool when I've read about that through your articles. So I'm glad that you brought that up. So for this next question, this is a bit more of a selfless question for you, because I know that I love buying from your site, and I don't burn a ton of incense, so I've only picked up from you a couple of times, but at this point, I wouldn't know where else I would want to look. And for people that may not be in the North American continent, or I'm sure you do ship internationally, but just say, if there are other places in the world that people can't connect directly to you, what are the things that they should look for or shouldn't look for? Or do you really know anywhere else at all that is doing the same thing that you're doing on a level like this? You don't have to make any specific examples, but do you really see other companies doing this? And if so, what would people look for as warning signs or anything like that?
Well, there are a lot of companies, like I say, you know, our capitalistic society has kind of bred a way of looking at things and relating based on profit alone.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the incense, when you know, let's say you type in copal and you want to buy some copal, There are like so many different kinds of copal, but among them, usually people, when you say copal, they think, oh, we want this sacred Mesoamerican, the sacred Mexican copal. Now, copal is a very broad term. It means a lot of things, and like damar copal, for instance. Copal is also an industrial term for a hard resin that can be used to make lacquers, shellacs, and finishes. Before we had the petroleum products for our paints and lacquers and coatings and oil paints, we used the tree resins. And the hard, you know, we're going to lacquer our mandolins and finish our violins and make oil paintings. These were all done with natural tree resins. So copal actually means, in industry, any hard resin that can be dissolved in a solvent and used to make finishes or products for wood, for instance. So, you know.
So that definition gets really wide.
It does. It's extremely wide. And on top of that, in Middle America, South America, copal simply means incense. They call everything copal. It's infused. It's maddening.
Wow. I didn't know that.
I'm going to send you some black copal.
I'm glad you brought up copal because I have been, I've seen like people talk about certain varieties of copal, and then I looked to find those varieties, and it's like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. There's like 300 different things here, and I can't even find the one that they mentioned. So I'm glad that you brought up that particular resin.
So people need to be specific. When you're shopping for incense resins, make sure the seller is clear about the Latin name of the resin. Once you have the Latin name, you can research and see if it really is what you want and if it comes from the place that you want. So a lot of people are selling Indonesian resins and African resins and, you know, anywhere but from South America, and they're calling them sacred copal, and people are consuming them. They're a lot cheaper, and they think, oh, here we go, you know, I've got this sacred Mexican copal I'm burning for my ritual. Yeah, they're all just as valuable, but people get misled, and often intentionally or by the vagueness of sellers. So when you're looking to purchase an incense, go for the people that are most above board, provide a lot of as much information as possible, and specifically the Latin names of whatever resin they're selling.
Yeah, I think that's a great. I think that does make a lot of sense. If you can get that source region and you make sure that they know what it's actually called, that is a really good step in the right direction. But yeah, as I said, I mean, if people can, they should pick up from you. So, because I mean, you just have such a wealth of information on your site. When I buy a resin from you, I learn about that resin in the process of buying it. You know, there's so much.
Wonderful.
And like, in all of my jars that I keep them separated, I always keep your little attachment, the little cardboard attachment that you have on the top, because I always want to remember the exact region and the exact Latin name and all of these things. So I know it's like, this isn't just a frankincense. This is from a specific place.
Right.
It's a specific type. And you can, over, you know, as you're trying out different resins and, you know, I'm talking about incense specifically in this article, but I'm definitely aware, as you mentioned towards the beginning, that there are so many different things that you work with and that just generally fall into this topic where, you know, where there's different, like we're talking about essential oils and resins.
That's
and
right.
all sorts
That's
of
right.
other things, herbal, just, you know, flowers and all sorts of things that fall into this category. If you have any examples that you would like to talk about, or if you'd rather not go into more negative stuff, that's fine. But this next question is just kind of, what are some of the more egregious things that are happening with some of these more mass marketed incenses that are just that you really would like people to know, hey, if you're not going to buy from me, this is the sort of thing that you're running into. I think already you mentioned with that Copal example how crazy it can get, where it's like you never know what you're getting. But is there anything else that you would like to go into on that topic, maybe?
Copal was the biggest one. I mean, when you know, people are basically just focused on selling and on profit. And
I was thinking, like, personally, I was thinking of maybe sandalwood as an example, because I know, I think if I research correctly, there's a bit of an issue with the sandalwood coming out of India. I believe that's Santalum spicatum. That's the Indian one, or Santalum album.
Album.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
album
right.
is oh, India, yeah. and spicatum, right. I believe, is Australian, if I remember correctly.
Oh, that's a tricky area.
Yeah, and that's why I was wanting to ask you about that, because I've been confused researching it, so I thought you might be able to give a bit more detail on something like that, and that might lead into just generally an understanding of other elements in this topic, too, just through the talk on maybe sandalwood, if you have something to say on it.
Yeah, sure. Yes, well, it's illegal now. We've overexploited sandalwood. It's illegal now to sell it in India to export it. I think they harvest small amounts for local use, but you know, everyone says, "Oh, I have you know, Indian sandalwood or Mysore sandalwood." You know, famous high quality sandalwood. But what's actually happening is there's a lot of sandalwood in Indonesia, and they're starting to harvest it there. And they have basically, apparently there's a wide variety of different subtypes of the sandalwood tree. Some are Mysore quality, and that's, so basically when you buy Mysore sandalwood, you know, it's not from India. Make sure that no one's telling you it's from India, because if they are, then you shouldn't buy from them. But they have quite a few different grades from Indonesia. Whether they're being harvested sustainably or not, it's really hard to tell. There is one particular type you can get. It's called balloon dust, and it's basically made from fallen trees. They've been on the ground for a while. And that, in my opinion, that's about the safest one to buy right now. But I haven't gotten to the bottom of it. I have a friend in Germany who has a connection in Indonesia, and you know, he speaks so highly of this guy. He's one of the biggest suppliers of sandalwood in the world. And but I personally don't have any information on how they harvest the sandalwood is sustainable or not. So unless somebody can come up and, you know, I mean, on the other hand, they're growing Santalum album in Australia. So Australia, you can't cut a sandalwood tree without the government coming down on you. So it's all regulated. So if you're going to buy sandalwood, I'd suggest, first of all, number one, get it from Australia. They have Santalum spicatum, but they also have plantations of Santalum album, the Indian sandalwood that they planted.
Excellent. I did not know that.
Yeah. So if sustainability is important, then I would stay to that, unless you can really verify the pedigree of your sandalwood, where it's coming from, how it was harvested. Obviously not from India, but Indonesia, Borneo, for instance, they all, sandalwood grows in all these places. I'm just concerned that, you know, things need to be transparent. And, you know, we need to know that the trees are doing okay. And we're not, you know, encouraging or participating in the decline of another species. And so I'm a little bit nervous about, even though, you know, my friend swears by this supplier, I'm a little nervous about buying sandalwood because there's not enough transparency on how it's produced. And
yeah, that's really what I was finding, because I learned about the troubles that they're having with the album trees in India, and then I tried to learn more on the topic, and it does seem extremely complex, with not necessarily any right answers on that topic. Thanks for going into that one a little bit. That was super helpful to me in particular, so hopefully a lot of other people will find interest in that answer.
Let me add that agarwood or oud is in the same ballpark.
Oh, okay.
It's really a cutthroat market too, adulterated. But you do have agarwood plantations. It's even more expensive than sandalwood. But a lot of it is from the wild, and again, the wild population is declining at a crazy rate because it's so expensive. People can make so much money from these little pieces of rotted wood or the essential oil that they can distill from it.
On the topic of sandalwood, and you also mentioned the agarwood, I wonder if you know the specifics of how those are distilled down into an essential oil. I'm of the opinion, I think, that it takes a massive amount of sandalwood to create like a single bottle of essential oil. You speak any on that topic?
Not as much as flowers. If you're distilling flowers, you're talking many kilograms of roses or jasmine to create a very small amount of essential oil. Orange blossoms, 100 kilos for a little bottle. Something
wow.
like that.
Yeah.
Sandalwood. You usually use the heartwood, which is rich in oil. The same with agarwood. Agarwood in itself has no fragrance. It's only when it's attacked by a particular mycelium, a fungus.
Oh yeah.
That's what creates the fragrance. So it's only the parts of the tree that have the resin, because the fungus creates a resin, an aromatic resin. So it takes quite a few trees, but they take only specific parts of the trees. And the distillations are lengthy. Usually you distill for days and days to get every little drop out of them. So they powder them, and then they soak them for a day or two, and then they slowly distill them.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, well, thanks for going a little bit into that, because I did remember reading a little bit about the agarwood, but then it's been a couple of years since I read about that one. So I've got two more questions here for you, and these ones are probably going to be a little lighter. I know you are incredibly passionate about frankincense. So I have started to pick certain varieties of your frankincense that I've purchased that I really enjoy over other ones, and I wonder if you would like to talk about maybe one or two of your favorite sort of types of frankincense that you like on a personal level.
Well, it does change over time, but right now I'd say I love the black frankincense carteri, which is basically, it doesn't look like much. It's sticky and looks kind of like dark honey, lumpy. And the neglecta that I brought from Kenya, from the Samburu tribe, it's very unique. Beautiful, beautiful, sweet fragrance. But as far as medicine goes, like when I'm making creams or salves or, I'll take the powder internally too. It'll be the Royal Green Hajari. That's my go-to for medicinal purposes. And this grade that we got is beautiful.
Perfect.
Did you get any of that?
I think.
Did you get any?
Sorry, what was the last one that you mentioned there? You're asking.
Oh, the Sultan's grade, Royal Green Hajari.
I think I did. I think I got a bit of the green and the red Hajari. I'm not sure which green it was, but I think I did get, I may have got that. Hopefully I did, because I would like to give that a try. And if I remember the one that you're talking about correctly, I think you've had some of that neglect in the past as well, haven't you? I think I got some of that. Isn't that one of the ones that sort of just melts right down into almost like a liquid when you put it on heat?
Yeah.
Really, really love that smell. That just fills the house with a brilliant scent.
Yeah. Beautiful stuff.
So, I'm going to be talking, like, one of my main things about this article is sort of how you burn incense in a way, how you burn resins particularly.
Right.
Not just going to the store and buying sticks and lighting the end of it, but if you're going to get resins, then what do you do with this stuff? I don't need you to explain the whole thing to me, but because that's sort of what I'm doing with
methods.
The article. But yeah, what is your favorite method of doing that, and is it different for different ones?
Yeah. Charcoals are easy and convenient, but they just burn too hot, and your resin is gone in a poof of smoke really quickly. Electric heaters are great because you can control the temperature, and you can make resin last for hours and hours and hours. But lately I've been enjoying the tea light burner. So it's it uses a tea light with a copper dish on top. It's great for resins.
That sounds like a nice method.
Yeah, it is. It's simple. It's really inexpensive.
I like that it will go out on its own.
And it's elegant.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
The electric burner gives you, the most control, but they're usually very expensive too.
Yeah, I picked up the, I believe it's Mermaid Arts. Are you familiar? I think you're familiar with that one. I think you may have even been the person that recommended that one.
Yeah, possible.
But yeah, I grabbed one of those for myself, and then I got a second one, and then sent that off to my friend in Sweden. I'm like, you have to use this, because I'm always talking about how much I love burning your incense, your different resins, and he's like, I live in this apartment, and I'm really not comfortable with filling it with smoke, and then I'm like, I have to send you this electric heater, so then you can adjust
solution.
It to your own, you don't have to worry about filling the house with smoke. So yeah, that's cool. I've been going back and forth between the charcoal burning and the electric heater. So those were going to be my two main ways that I was going to describe to people through this article of how to find those, what to use. Well, I think that's pretty much all my questions I have here for you, man. So I think this was a really informative conversation. So I really, really do appreciate your time, and I really love your company. And I sat down to write this article, I was just like writing about you a lot, because I was like, this is the person, this is the company that I need to be directing people to. And then I'm like, all right, I just need to get in contact with Dan. Hopefully he'll answer me. So for me personally, I'm glad you actually wanted to do this actual conversation version. I think this was probably even better for people to hear. Or again, we don't necessarily have to publish the audio, but even just transcribing this out, I think is still going to be a much better read than if it had been just sort of, I send you the questions, you send me the answers, and then I publish
it. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm happy that you're happy with it.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot for the conversation. And I guess we'll end it here, unless you have any other questions or comments or anything.
Nothing burning.
All right. Well, then we'll go ahead and end it here. Have a great day.
You too, Michael. Thank you.